Hi everyone, I'm Amanda. I'm an alcoholic.
I love this man. He is a wonderful husband for the last 8 years. I give you Chris Lee.
Hey everybody, I'm Chris Lee. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I come in here, my sobriety date is June 14, 2017. I was broken when I come here. I come off the street. I was homeless. So I'm here tonight to tell how it was and how it is now. I was born in 1978 in Montgomery, Alabama. A lot of people say that's what's wrong with me. But I only lived in Alabama 1 year. My dad was from Alabama, mom from College Park. My mom said, ain't no way you live in Alabama, so I lived in College Park until I was about 5 years old. I lived in Old Nashville, but I grew up in Jonesboro. Had a good childhood. My dad was an alcoholic and a hippie. I mean, pot smoke in my house is normal. That was what it was, alcohol and weed, you know what I'm saying? So at a young age, I thought that was normal. My dad, you know, he would pass out drunk from a young age. He would say, go get me a beer, and I would go get the beer, and I'd crack the top, take a swig. He'd never say nothing, you know, like I never caught a buzz at a young age. As I was getting older, by the time I was 12 years old, I was already sneaking in a liquor cabinet. Like, that was a liquor cabinet in our house. My mom drank 2 fingers tequila, so I could always pour a little water in there and get away with it, catch a buzz, you know, like my family's alcoholics. My mom had 3 other sisters and brothers. My dad had, he was the youngest of 12 kids. So they were all alcoholics, pretty much. Well, my dad, I always struggled in school with my reading. I had dyslexia, and I was always pushed in the learning disability class. So I always felt like I was not a part of, like I was slower or not right in school. So I always wanted to hang out on the street, so I would never stay in the house, wouldn't stay in school. I really didn't ever get an education. You know, my mom kind of like, she was, you know, partying. My dad, you know, I was a young age. My dad died at 86, so it crushed me as a little boy. And I couldn't understand death, you know, like I was young. And that's who I looked up to. My dad was everything to me. My mom ended up remarrying. And then, I mean, I was all boy. I stayed outside, you know, from a young age. I rode motorcycles, a lot of dirt bikes. I had BMX, you know, But back in them days, we don't have cell phones. We had to make money. We pushed a lawnmower around the neighborhood to make a little money, you know, do something in somebody's yard. So, like, the older guys in the neighborhood, they'd always buy the alcohol for us. So, pretty much, like, every weekend, you know, we were getting drunk from, like, 12 to forever, so pretty much, you know. And as long as that kept going, you know. So, you know, as I got older, I started experiencing with other things, you know. Like, I started smoking pot, like, in sixth grade. Started doing LSD, like, you know, pretty young. Then during those times, like, I really just was trying to figure things out. Like, I was just having fun. By the time I was 18 years old, I started doing cocaine a good bit. You know, that was around the early 90s. So, you know, that I think everybody was doing it. But anyway, so I seen, I was 18 years old. I seen all these kids, you know, back in the days, we come out of the house. We had everything ironed and fresh. Like, you come out of the house, your shoes all look good. All these other boys in the neighborhood, they were driving new cars. They were doing it. They had kids. They weren't working. And, you know, it's like, I had no future. I had no direction. I had no education. So I was like, I didn't know any other thing. I didn't know what to do. You know, I was just trying to, like, make a dollar. So I was like, yeah, they look good. They doing good, you know. So I kept going. I was getting a little bit for this person. And next thing I know, me and my mom were doing it. So me and my mom did it together. So our house, you know, pretty much was just like, pretty much a trap house. Pretty much like it was just run, do whatever. So I never had a chance to escape from it. You know how, like, a lot of people, like, I see my friends, they be like going home and sleeping and, you know, and getting away from this and that. Well, I was, like, it was in my house. My mom was using it, you know. I started doing meth. I did meth, like, man, 20 years probably. I mean, like, you know, I had my first baby when I was 20. And I remember the first time I ever seen her, when she was born, I thought to myself, I was like, man, I can stop this. You know, I can do this for her. I was wrong because I was completely powerless. I remember the first time I realized that, like, I had a problem was, like, whenever I would do it, like I couldn't do it during the day at my house because these people, you know, the person who was giving it to me would come to my house and couldn't see me like that. So they'd be like, So it was kind of like I would do it at night. You know, like I would do it with a couple of people at night because, like, during the day, I couldn't make no money on it. So I realized, man, when I started doing it at night, I couldn't quit doing it. Like, I was completely powerless, and I was paranoid. I was such a paranoid person, y'all. I was mean to everybody that as long as I was sober, I was good to my loved ones, and you know, she could tell you, she'd been through it with me. So I was just a really paranoid, really, I lived in fear. I was still a kid in a young man's body. I lived in fear. I didn't know how to live, really, and how to function and treat people right. So that went on for a while, and I had my first baby, and I was married before. I was with another woman. And for a long time, you know, like, I accused her. I mean, I did accuse her, but I also it was her fault. It was always her fault. That's why we separated. It was all her fault. But then after I got sober, and I started looking back, like, years ago, how all this started, because I never really noticed it until I come in the program. I didn't notice how I really was, you know what I'm saying? I was kind of like living life. Well, I realized, man, that I pushed her to that, to leave me and do the things that she was doing. I was the one that was called to cause that, you know. So then I had my son. I had a son by her in 03. And in 03, I actually, like, moved away from the city and moved to the country. And when I got to the country, I met these guys, man, that had a grading company. So I never had a job. So these guys, they were like, they taught me, like, you know, ins and outs of, like, grading, you know, like, I actually learned how to run a piece of equipment. And it just worked for me. That was how I made a living, and that's how I make a living today, too. But I couldn't never hold a job down. So me and her ended up separating and had two older kids by my ex-wife, and I met my wife in 07. In 06, I was on the way to work. And I've been partying all night, and I got in a bad car accident. So I had to have surgery on my shoulder. So I was up in Lakewood, and I was up there getting something, you know. I shouldn't have been up there. But a girl come walked up to me one day and said, "Hey, I see you got your arm in a sling. You know, I got a doctor you can go to." She's like, "I got a doctor you can go to. You just put my name down. It takes $50 off my visit." I'm like, "That's cool." She said, they'll write you whatever you want. So I go in there. I write down 120 Roxy 30s, 90 Loratads, and 90 bars. They got me every bit of it. I walked out there, had insurance, but $5 for all of it. $5. So at the time, I done got a divorce, and I had child support. So I had $500 child support, and I was kind of struggling. You know, I was trying to pay bills. Well, that was the way, that was my little way out, making a little money. But then I never did opiates. I always did uppers. So one day I tried like a half, and I remember that making my nose, and I felt nauseous. I didn't like it. But I remember, like, on the other stuff, I couldn't treat nobody good, and I couldn't act right because my head, my brain, I done lost it. I couldn't be on no upper no more. I wasn't that person to be around no more. So I was a drug addict, so I completely went to something else. Well, before I knew it, I was going to three doctors a month, and my wife was taking two people to the doctor. So we were getting probably anywhere between like 400 Roxy 30s a month. But we ended up losing our child. We signed our daughter over. We had a daughter in 08 together. So she was a year old. And we signed her over to her dad. We made a decision because we couldn't do it. Well, when I started doing that, I was doing 13 30s a day. I know I ain't supposed to be like talking about drugs like this, but I'm just putting it out there because I want y'all to know what I was doing and how bad it really got. You know what I mean? So one night, my buddy was in town from Indiana, and he was like, you know, "Can you get me some heroin or whatever?" So I'm up on Camelton Road, and it was in 2010. That night, I made a decision that was going to ruin my life, and I put a needle on my arm. And from that point on, all hands down, I lost all respect for myself, my kids, and everything I had. Like, I kind of just lost it. I was lost. I mean, if it didn't go in the needle, I didn't do it. I lived out of my car. I mean, we both lived out of our car, and I was making doctors. And I remember, during that time, I was right before actually 2010. I was working for C.W. Matthews, a grading company. I've been there. I was there for like 5 years. I cannot tell you how I kept a job. I don't know if the people, the foreman loved me. But anyways, when I was sick, I couldn't go to work because I was coming off the medication. I was having withdrawals. I couldn't make it to work. My buddy was like, hey, go to this doctor, man, and they'll give you this medicine where you won't be sick no more. Where you know, it's Suboxone. So I go to this drug specialist, and I go in there, and I pee in a cup. And I'm sitting there, and he comes back in there, and he says, sir, I'm going to prescribe this medicine to you. But this ain't going to save your life. You got everything on the street in your system. He said, you need a 12-step program. I'm like, what's 12-step program? What's the 12-step program? Like, I never heard anything about it. All I saw was, like, rehabs on TV where it's all, like, locked up in a place or something. That's what I thought rehab was about. And then, so I ended up taking the medicine, but I just used it for a shoulder to lean on. I wasn't taking it like I was supposed to take it. And, but I didn't know for a little bit longer, I ended up catching a burglary charge in 2013. So it was my first time, so I was either go to RSAP or go to rehab. And I ended up going to rehab. And at that point, I had to be there 12 months, and at that point, I actually, like, planted a seed. Like, I knew I could, it showed me that I could stay sober. I've never been sober like that I could be sober, and like, I actually was, like, finding friends and, like, you know, really seeing love from other people. And being there, it, like, really, like, planted a seed for me. And I was like, man, so I got out of rehab, and I got my daughter back. I got back in my kid's life. I got a job, got the house, got the car. I thought it was a good idea to drink again. I never made him. I left them up here, moved back to the south side, never made them eating again. And it was around Fireball when Fireball come out. I thought, man, that's a great idea. You know, let's have a little Fireball. Let's have a little taste of Fireball, y'all. Yeah, it really went south real quick. Before I knew it, I was right back doing the same thing I was doing again. And the hardest time is I signed my daughter over. So then I promised her she had her own room. I said, you know, this, you know, like I remember telling her, that'll never happen again. You're always going to be with us. You know, it's heartbreaking to even talk about it. So she had her own room and everything. And I just pissed it away. Like it would start out like a snowball effect. I was getting turned off. I remember when she said, well, when are we going to turn the cable back on? Well, she didn't know. I didn't have rent money because I didn't spend all of it. You know, she was a little girl. She didn't understand. So defects got called. So then I lost her again. This time around, there was no more doctor. That was done. All that was over. We lost the first car. We lost the second car. We lost the house. Me and my wife stayed on the street with no phones or nothing. We stayed on the street for a whole year. We slept under a bridge. We had a little shanty built in Union City off 138. We lived under that bridge for a whole year, all the way from summer, all the way through winter to summer. The only thing we knew to do, I remember being out there, I thought I was never going to come back from that. I remember people would hand me the money out in the car when I was panhandling. I remember, like, people smelling good. Like, I thought that I was never going to, you know what I mean? Like, you know how I felt. And I remember, like, not showering. I remember on morning when people, you know, I smelled because they would move away. And I mean, and that was, you know, I was like, man, that's horrible, you know. But that was the life I lived. That's how powerless I was. Like, I went to detox, like, 4 times in 1 year, like, well, 3 times. Every time it would rain or I'd be struggling, I'd be sick on the street, I wouldn't have no money. And I'd call my family and be like, hey, you know, can y'all help me out? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do this thing. Every time I get out of there, I'd be feeling good. I'd come right out of there every time. I thought I could do it one more time. That one more time, I'd stretch it out for about 3 more months. And then finally one day, I'm on the street, and Matt's wife comes out there, and Max's wife went out there with my daughter, my oldest daughter, and I weighed about 150 pounds. And they actually took pictures. They got pictures of it. They got pictures of us under the bridge and that. Like, she's like, when you want some help, you call me, and I'm going to come pick both of y'all up. I'll wash y'all clothes, I'll take y'all detox, and I'll take y'all to rehab. And I don't know if she just wants some more child support. Because I was so far behind child support, man, I was 30 grand in the hole when I got sober. Now we're over $5,000, so I've been doing something right. Man, she done got all that money back. But you know what, man? She's a good woman. God was working through her. She's not really a godly woman, but, you know, like, she was there, and she not only picked me up, she picked my wife up. Sat there with me the whole time at St. Jude's, and that was the best detox I've ever been to. That was a really good place. I remember sitting there, like, I had to sit there all day at that place, and I said, I ain't sitting here. I'm telling you, I'm not going to be sick. I'm like, you're going to take me right there to the bluff, and I'm going to get something. And she took me right over to the trap, too, right in the bluff, and I got what I wanted. And she, I think she wanted to see me do it. And I'm like, but at the time, that's crazy. Like, it was so normalized, like, for me. That was normalized. Like, who does, like, is that normal? Like, I think back to that, like, I was carrying them in my pocket like it was a cigarette or something. You know, it was that bad, and I was that powerless. You know, like, it was just a normal thing for me to be out there like that. And the reason I got sober was because it was cold one day, and I was on the street. When I was out there, we ended up going into a hotel stairway, and we had a syringe on us, and the rookie cop, normally they would just throw it away and say, go. But that day, that rookie cop gave me a charge, praline and possession of a paraphernalia. And man, I remember when I was doing my fourth step, I remember I had resentment toward him. Man, I was like, man, that man, he done messed me up, man. I done called him, you know, like, it was like, I was mad at him. But then, you know, like, after writing it down and looking, I'm like, that man saved my life, because I caught, like, a little misdemeanor, and I would have never got, because I couldn't hold a sign. Like, it was before COVID. So if you were homeless before COVID, you could only fly a sign in certain places. So, like, once I caught the charge, I had a warrant, because I couldn't do probation. So I was like, I was like ducking and diving every time I caught the pull up on the ramp. Like, but that's why I got sober. I went in front of the judge, 17, and I told him, he said, just give him 90 days. I said, no, I can't do 90 days. I said, I need a year in a rehab. I need to be court ordered in a rehab. 90 days, I'm going to go right back on the street. I said, I'm a drug addict. I can't, 90 days ain't going to help me. I knew, because from 2013, I knew how I stayed sober, and I knew that I could come back if I could just get back. And once I got back, man, I was at one step over here. I got quarter for 14 months. I was there. And it was great, man. It was, I remember the blessings, man, started coming. I remember just like feeling like when I come off the street, how great it felt, man, just to wash my clothes and take a shower in the same day. And I remember like it was so crazy, and I think, and people like really think this is crazy, but like that, when I first went to the program, like being in that comfortable bed and that room, like I couldn't sleep at first. And then they would take us to the labor pool at like 5 o'clock in the morning. I'd be over there at 5 o'clock, lay down on the concrete. Y'all, as soon as I lay down on the concrete, I fall asleep. Because I was so used to hearing cars. I guess I was so used to being outside. It was like, and like, you know, another thing, man, it was like, you know, when you're out there in the street like that, you actually have to learn how to live around people again, because you don't know how to act at all. Like, you really get, like, out of pocket about things. And now, today, man, I have my kids back in my life. And, you know, thank God for my home group. Sobriety First at Biscayne. I've been going there 8 years. You know, I have my kids in my life. I got my daughter back. She has her own room. So I got 8 years sober, and the things that I want to share, you know, that's really important to me is I live in chaos in my mind. Like, my mind was not right. Like, I treated all my loved ones horrible. Like, I mean, I don't know how she stayed with me. I don't know how she stayed with me. There must be something good when I'm sober, because I was horrible, you know, as a person. And, but today, man, I actually just been living in my house. I just bought a house. Just bought a house. 3 bedrooms, 2 baths. Yeah. And you know, and we put a good lump sum of money down. And, you know, like, You know, it's so this program is so blessing. I've had the same cell phone number. The whole cell phone number. Who does that? I ain't never had the same cell phone number, y'all, for 8 years. That's crazy. Now, who does that? You know what I mean? That's unheard of, you know? And I have this little dog. People laugh at me about this, but, like, I have a peace of mind today. Like, I never could sit on the couch. I couldn't sit on the couch through my whole life. Like, I was always running, trying to do this, trying to do that, trying to do this. Now, I have this little wiener dog, a long-haired wiener dog, and she's everything, man. She's like my... I could just pet her and be in my own little, you know, like, I can be in peace. This program has helped me so much in my mind. Like, just being around people and being, you know, having a spiritual, having God of my understanding would, like, really help me out a lot. And, I still have problems. I'm not the greatest person. I'm not saying this program has just made me perfect. But the thing that this program has really helped me with is I recognize when I'm in the wrong. Like, through my life, I could easily cuss you out and like, not even think that I was in the wrong, you know. Now, if I say something to somebody out of the way or I get pissed off, you know, I'm always the one, I'll go back and apologize. It's really taught me to be respectful. Sometimes I apologize when they're in the wrong, I think. I just do it just because I want my side of the street to be good. You know what I mean? Like, if I apologize, I'm good. Like, you know, but that's, I don't know. But you know, I've had the same job and I have a good life. You know, everything that I've been through, I don't beat myself up for it, because it's what who made me who I am today. Like, if I wouldn't have been through all that stuff, like, I see people, like, I got family members like my sister. She don't have no problem with drugs or alcohol or nothing. She has no money. I'm like, she spends all her money on lotto, and like, she's so unhappy. And I'm like, man, if you just had the program or Al-Anon or something, because like, this program has showed me like another life, you know. Like, I see normal people, and like, me sponsoring other people has really helped me out. Like, it's really showed me. And you know, before COVID, you know, our program, like, well, on our side, like, we were, Biscayne was like really, really busy during COVID. I mean, before COVID. And I remember coming in and, like, seeing other people. You know, we have, like, 100 years of sobriety over there. Like, some of our people, you know, it's got, like, 40 and 50 years, 35 years, stuff like that. And I remember coming in, I'm like, and Rosemary, I don't know, y'all know Rosemary, but she was my first sponsor. And, you know, like, she was great. And I remember her telling me that she had, like, 32 years or something. And I'm like, I had, like, a week. Sober. I told her, I said, man, I had 35 years, I had a place and getting a check every month, I'd go get me a bottle of liquor. She said, you in the right place. I went at my mind, I was like, damn, you had 35 years, it's time to drink. But now, today, I know that you know, today, I have the ability to know that times in my life, even when it's hard, like, I don't, it's so crazy how this program has gave me the ability, like, it completely removed it from my life. Like, I don't think about drinking. I don't think about using. Like, it's I don't know. It's so crazy how God works, you know. And you know, I didn't have, like, really, when I come in here, I found God through y'all. You know, like, y'all's spirit gave me God, like, at first. Like, you know, I had this God, you know, that I prayed to when the cops pulled me over. You know what I mean? Or, like, something like that. Or I was in a real tight, I would pray, but... Like, I remember, like, seeing people smiling and, like, shaking their hand and giving them a hug. And it showed me the ability to, like, it showed me a God of my understanding that we get in these rooms. And it's just been really special to me. And that's all I got, guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chris. I was doing meetings at the halfway house that he went to. Dude, when he came in, he was fat shit crazy. I mean, half the size. He was just, it's amazing. Yeah. it just gets better to be able to watch somebody come in from the streets, go to rehab, and then he got an apartment at a friend's house. And then they got another apartment. They got custody of their kids back. Now he's got a house. It's just, it's unbelievable, some of the stuff. And it's because of this program.
First I slipped, and then I tripped. To a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul. Thank you.